Copaic Audio Tour. Stop A. Welcome to Taconic State Park and the historic hamlet of Copaic Falls. This 15-stop audio tour is about the people and events that define this region. We are sharing these stories with you thanks to the support of Friends of Taconic State Park. You can take this audio tour along the Ironworks Heritage Trail, which has 25 informative signs about important areas of the former 19th century ironworks and its community. Our tour is meant to provide more depth into topics that the trail signage does not explore. Some of the topics we will share with you along the Ironworks Heritage Trail include stories of the earliest peoples to live in this region, how the first European Americans began to reshape the landscape, and how the leaders and community members of the Copaic Ironworks forged their working town. If you were not at the Stone Blast Furnace, we strongly encourage you to start your tour from that location. You'll find it if you navigate to 33 Valley View Road, off Route 344. If you are driving, please park in the parking area next to the furnace. We also recommend stopping at the visitor center and watching the 8-minute video before or after your walking tour. When walking the trail, please be careful in some areas that might be very steep or rocky. When you're ready to start the tour, head back to the small white building near the driveway entrance. Look for sign number 14. This will be your first stop. Stop B. The small white office building is one of the oldest standing structures at the Copaic Ironworks, appearing on maps as early as 1850. Much of the daily management of the ironworks would have been done here, tracking all of the materials needed to produce iron, managing sales and purchases, and paying workers for their services. Workers were often paid in a type of company-issued currency known as scrip, which could only be used at company-owned stores. This system was common in 19th-century industrial towns that were created, owned, and operated by a single company. The system was favored by employers as it kept the workforce tied to their workplace and helped owners recapture much of their costs for housing and feeding their employees in regions without much commercial development. Company scrip was widely resented by workers, however, and lay at the center of many labor conflicts in the 19th and early 20th centuries. Paying employees in company scrip was eventually made illegal in the United States under the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. Along the eastern side of this office is a small brick structure used to store black powder and other explosives. These were used to blast difficult deposits of rock within the iron mines that would take too long to excavate with hand tools or machinery. If you look closely at the roof line, notice that the wooden roof is resting on top of the brick base. This was done so that if an explosion were to occur, the force of the blast would travel upward, blowing the roof off rather than exploding outward at ground level where people and property could be seriously harmed. Our next stop is the long white house across the driveway from the office. Look near sign number 18. Stop C. Along the southern side of the roadway and across the road from the office building, you can see a structure known today as the Link House. During the 19th century, this residence was rented out to working families, especially to skilled furnace ironworkers. The close proximity of this building to the ironworks was essential, as they had to tend the iron furnace during ongoing operations that could last days or weeks at a time. Two brothers, Oscar and Lyman Link, former employees of the ironworks, were the last occupants of the house. They lived in the residence from the closing of Copaic Ironworks in 1903 until they passed away in the 1930s. Because the brothers stayed in this dwelling through the founding of Taconic State Park, this building was never converted into a cabin for campers. Today, the Link House is one of the most intact and least modified workers' houses at the Copaic Ironworks. Stop D. The Chesbro House, near Sign 17, is one of the oldest standing structures in Taconic State Park. Built sometime after 1845 in a Greek Revival style that was popular at the time, the house is named after Isaac Chesbro, who was a manager at the Copaic Ironworks and married to Harriet Pomeroy, the sister of the ironworks owner Lemuel Pomeroy Jr. The home was centrally located between the local iron ore mines, the blast furnace, and many of the workers' cabins. This made the home a place where Isaac and other managers after him could travel and oversee any part of the mining or furnace operations quite easily. Today, the home belongs to Taconic State Park. Stop E. In this location, between the Link House and the bridge over Bash Bish Creek, we can see the site where the Pomeroy family built their home. Lemuel Pomeroy Jr. established the Copaic Ironworks in 1845 and successfully led its operation until his sudden passing in 1853. Pomeroy died without leaving a will, and so portions of the property were divided up among his successors. Isaac Chesbro, a brother-in-law, business partner, and manager of the Kopake Ironworks, gradually consolidated some of the critical lots around the center of the property and sold the site to Frederick K. Miles, a relative newcomer to the region's iron industry. The house where the Pomeroy family lived stood until the early 20th century, when early efforts to develop the area into a recreational park led to the creation of a camping ground at this site.
Please proceed to the Church of St. John in the Wilderness, located about 100 yards west, beyond the Green Iron Bridge, on the right-hand side of Route 344, diagonally across from the park headquarters. If you have not done so already, please proceed to the Church of St. John in the Wilderness, located at 261 State Route 344, next door to Taconic State Park headquarters and across the street from the Depot Deli.
Stop F. Faith was a central part of life for many working around Kopake Falls in the 19th century. Houses of worship could be both sources of unity and conflict in the community in an era when denominational affiliation was often closely intertwined with ethnic, cultural, and class identity. The Episcopal Church of St. John in the Wilderness was constructed in 1852, sponsored by Kopake Ironworks founding owner Lemuel Pomeroy Jr. He and other members of the congregation could afford to hire famed architect Richard Upjohn, designer of Trinity Church in New York City, to fashion their Carpenter Gothic-style church. However, as an exclusively Episcopalian institution, the church was unable to serve the needs of many of Kopake's faithful. Increasingly, the company relied on immigrants from Ireland for labor, most of whom were Roman Catholic. At first, Kopake's Catholics were only served by visiting priests. The local Catholic community began raising money, and by 1867 were able to build St. Bridget's Church, and at last hold regular weekly mass in a building of their own. Meanwhile, the Episcopal services held at St. John of the Wilderness saw attendance steadily decline, and services there became more and more sporadic. Methodist membership, in particular, with a more emotional worship style and looser organizational structure, grew rapidly throughout the 19th century, both in Kopake Falls and nationwide. As with Catholics, Kopake's Methodists at first had no building of their own, instead worshiping at a member's home. By the early 1880s, some Methodist worship services began to be held in St. John in the Wilderness, but the remaining Episcopal members of Kopake were not always willing to share the space. Mrs. Fanny Peck, a descendant of some of the church's founding members, tried and failed to stop the services through legal means, but she could not locate the deed for the church. In 1887, she and several other Episcopal residents took the only key to the church and locked themselves inside in order to prevent Kopake's Methodist residents from using it for their Sunday services. The standoff ended when funds to build a new Methodist church were raised. The new Methodist Episcopal Church opened in 1892 and held Methodist services until 1955. That building currently houses the Rolf Janssen Historical Society, located on 8 Miles Road.
Our next stop is the historic train depot on Route 344, known today as the Depot Deli.
Stop G. The train depot at Kopake Falls, near sign number 24, was a vital hub of activity in the daily life of the local community. One reason Lemuel Pomeroy Jr. selected this area to build his ironworking community was that he anticipated the building of the rail line that would become the New York and Harlem Railroad in 1852. The line serving the Kopake Ironworks would be known as the Harlem Division of the New York Central Railroad for most of the 20th century. This line connected what had been a remote rural community with larger towns to the north, like Chatham, and, more importantly, to the bustling metropolis of New York City to the south. Warehouses with local goods to be shipped out were located close to this depot station. The post office, and eventually a telegraph station near the depot, brought the latest news from around the world. The station's name changed from Kopake Ironworks to Kopake Falls sometime after the Kopake Ironworks closed in 1903. Over the next few decades, rail traffic steadily declined as automobiles became more popular, roadways improved, and the economy of upstate New York became less industrial. The last train to serve Kopake Falls passed through in 1976. Even before the rail lines ceased to operate, the depot was transformed into a lumber supply shed in the early 1960s. It survived a fire from an arsonist in 1974. Today, the depot is home of the Depot Deli, where people can find refreshments, meals, and camping supplies.
Our next stop is the swimming area, known as the Ore Pit, located behind the park headquarters.
Stop H. A pond, located across Route 344 and beyond the park headquarters building, is a popular swimming area. This pond was once a large open pit mine, the source of iron ore for the nearby Kopake Ironworks. The nearby sign, number 25, has more information. Historic accounts suggest this mine was opened as early as the 1830s to help supply an earlier ironworks in Ankrum, New York. The ore, which resembled a rusty rock more than anything recognizably metal, was excavated with pickaxes, hand drills, and black powder. For this back-breaking and often dangerous work, laborers received about 70 cents per day in 1845, or roughly $25 in modern money. Census records show that many of the workers in this mine were recent immigrants from Ireland. By the 1870s, pumps were needed to drain water that had begun seeping into the main ore pit. The miners had also begun to crush the ore using a device known as a Blake ore crusher, a portion of which is now housed next to the blast furnace stack. Teams of workers then hauled the crushed ore onto small cars on a light gauge rail line, which brought the ore to the furnace to be smelted into workable iron. Many of these same workers would also have been responsible for removing the tailings, or waste rock, from the mine. Some of the large hills nearby were likely made from these mine tailings.
The next four stops describe the early history and establishment of Kopake Falls. While listening to this history, please travel back to the Kopake Ironworks historic site and find the Day Pond, located just beyond the furnace stack on the trail to the Bashbish Falls. It's a very short walk from the furnace to the pond, but very steep at the outset. Please continue your walk back to the Kopake Ironworks historic site as you listen to this track.
Stop I. Part of Kopake's remarkable story is told in the rocks and stones found along the shores of the Bashbish Brook. Nearly 1.8 billion years ago, the spot where you are now standing was located at the bottom of a large ocean teeming with early forms of life. Some of these organisms had evolved shells and skeletons made of calcium carbonate, and when these animals died, their shells and skeletons gradually accumulated to form a sediment. Over the course of hundreds of millions of years, the accumulated debris of the ocean's life petrified into limestone. During this same period, early algae and plant life produced oxygen through photosynthesis, which bonded with dissolved particles of iron in the water, forming iron ore. Between 550 and 440 million years ago, these limestone formations, and the iron ore deposits they contained, were thrust upward by the pressure of colliding land masses, tilting and lifting up what would become the Taconic mountain range. Further uplift thrust huge slabs of even older rocks westward from Vermont and Massachusetts, placing older, more resistant rocks on top of younger sedimentary layers. Once taller than the Alps of Europe, this ancient mountain range was slowly eroded by weather, the accumulation of sediment and glaciers. The older rocks from the ancestral Taconic Mountains proved much more resistant to weathering than the newer, surrounding layers, which may have helped concentrate iron-rich sediments at the foot of this mountain chain. Many millennia later, beginning in the colonial era of New York's history, the presence of these rich iron deposits would profoundly shape the human history of the region. The first iron discovered in the Taconic Range was likely bog iron, concentrated ores found in marshy areas. Later mining operations at the end of the 18th and early 19th centuries unlocked the deeper deposits of iron ore around Kopake that had laid in wait for over a billion years.
If you are not already there, please continue your walk back to the Kopake Ironworks historic site as you listen to this track.
Stop J. Ancestral histories of the Mohicans include stories of traveling to this place across a body of water they called Akokpek, meaning snake waters. This Mohican word, Akokpek, would later be transliterated by European colonists as Kopake and applied as a name to the region. Indigenous residents of this region did not just hunt, but also established permanent and seasonal villages based around farming, fishing, and trade. Over the centuries, as different groups traveled, traded, and occasionally fought each other, a confederation of communities along the river valley who spoke Algonquin languages and shared similar cultures formed a people that would call themselves the Mahicana, or people of the waters that are never still. Today, they are more widely known by the European transliterations Mohican or Mahican. In 1609, Mohican people greeted Henry Hudson, the first recorded European to travel up the river that the Mohicans called Mahicanatuck. Hudson was working for the Dutch East India Company, searching for a water route to Asia, and while he failed to find this fabled Northwest Passage, his voyage laid the foundation for the Dutch colonization of the region. As the Dutch and later the English colonized the valley of the river that they came to call the Hudson River, a robust exchange in animal furs for manufactured goods grew between the Mohicans and Europeans. Members of the Mohawks competed against the Mohicans for the best hunting grounds. A series of wars fought over these lands, along with new diseases brought from Europe, eventually devastated the Mohican population. Some of the survivors settled in western Massachusetts on the site of an older Mohican village called Winnoctocook, which European missionaries renamed Stockbridge. Mohican peoples continued to shape the history of the region throughout the 18th century, with some Mohicans serving with the Continental Army during the American Revolution. In the late 18th and early 19th century, state and federal authorities forcibly removed the remaining Mohican people in a series of relocations, first to western New York and later to reservations in Canada and Wisconsin, where many descendants live today.
If you are not already there, please continue your walk back to the Copaic Ironworks Historic Site as you listen to this track.
Stop K. For much of the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th century, this entire region was owned by one family, the Livingstons. In 1715, Scottish-born fur trader and merchant Robert Livingston the Elder used his political connections to acquire a massive 160,000-acre parcel of land in a royal charter from King George I. The land became known as Livingston Manor, with Livingston himself serving as the first lord of Livingston Manor, ruling over tenants on his land in the style of a traditional English baron. Livingston Manor's first tenants included over 3,000 refugees from Germany who worked land that they rented from Lord Livingston, mostly cutting timber that Livingston then sold to the English Navy at a great profit. Tensions between the renters and landowners began almost immediately, and by the 1760s, disagreements had boiled over into the first of a series of rent wars, an organized protest movement against crushing debts and antiquated land laws that made it hard for tenants to leave. The unrest continued into the time of the American Revolution, by which time the Livingston family was involved in their own rebellion against British rule. During this period, Robert Livingston the Elder's grandson, also named Robert Livingston, was an ardent supporter of American independence who served in the Stamp Act Congress, formed to protest British taxation. His son, also named Robert Livingston, was a member of the Second Continental Congress and one of the men selected to draft the Declaration of Independence. During the war, the Livingstons used the Ancrum Ironworks, which they owned, to produce cannonballs and other supplies for the Continental Army, including a massive iron chain that was stretched across the Hudson River to stop the British fleet. With their landlords so invested in the cause of independence, many disgruntled tenants of Livingston Manor became fervent loyalists. Some joined the British Army, fighting against colonial forces, and others sabotaged works on Livingston Manor. When the American colonies successfully secured their independence, it was a crushing blow to many of the loyalist tenants, and organized rent protests were largely suppressed for a generation. However, the tensions between impoverished tenants and landowners continued, even after Livingston Manor began to be divided up into smaller estates. In 1840, a new anti-rent party was formed to seek changes to state and federal laws regarding land rights for tenants and property owners. Some renters resisted paying rents they saw as unfair, violently attacked rent collectors, damaged property, and held boisterous rallies across the region. By 1845, the anti-rent movement had brought significant change and broke the power of the large land-holding families over their renters across New York State. Many of these reforms and ideas would be brought onto the national stage and lead to the formation of the Free Soil movement in the years leading up to the American Civil War. These local sentiments made it unlikely that long-term residents would want to work in the company-controlled community at Copaic Ironworks when it was founded in 1845.
If you are not already there, please continue your walk back to the Copaic Ironworks Historic Site as you listen to this track.
Stop L. The natural beauty of the landscape around Copaic Falls has attracted visitors for over 100 years. In the early 1900s, local residents Sally and Agnes Fagan recalled well-dressed visitors arriving at the railroad depot on elegant Pullman parlor cars and staying at the Bash Bish Inn, which was located near here. Many of the cottages available to rent were built in a carpenter Gothic style with fancy white trim that was frequently called gingerbread. Several of these buildings once belonged to the estate of the wealthy businessman Alfred Douglas, who had owned land around Bash Bish Falls in New York and Massachusetts. The decorative style of the buildings was meant to imitate his favorite structures from Switzerland. When Mr. Douglas passed away in 1876, a portion of his property was used to create the Bash Bish Inn. The inn operated until a devastating fire in 1918 caused the entire main building to be lost. In the 1920s, the remaining cabins and the property around the Copaic Ironworks were generously given to New York State to become Taconic State Park, which opened to the public in 1928.
Our next stop is the Day Pond, located just beyond the Furnace Stack on the trail to the Bash Bish Falls. Look for sign number 8. It's a short walk from the furnace to the pond, but very steep at the outset.
Stop M. As we approach the Day Pond area, sign number 10, we can see two of the most critical resources for keeping the 19th century Copaic Ironworks in operation. The ironworks needed to use moving water or steam to operate the iron smelting furnace. For much of the 19th century, flowing water was the most affordable and abundant source of mechanical power. Skilled managers had to control the flow of the water into the ironworks between the floods of spring and the low flows of late summer and fall. Several of the wide depressions just to the north and west of our location held water in reserve for the Copaic Ironworks. This water was channeled down into the ironworks and ran through a water wheel, which would turn the drive shafts for machinery needed to run the ironworks. Charcoal was the fuel used inside the furnace that allowed the ironworks to turn iron ore and limestone flux into molten iron that could be cast into various tools and bricks called ingots. At first, the local landscape supplied timber that could be turned into charcoal. Skilled workers, many of them who came from France and Italy, made the charcoal used at Copaic Ironworks. They carefully stacked wood in circular rings and buried the pile with earth before lighting it on fire. As the wood smoldered, it slowly changed into charcoal. Unfortunately, the needs of the Copaic Ironworks outpaced the rate of neighboring forests to regenerate. Flooding and mudslides occurred when the slopes along the waterways no longer had enough trees to hold the soil in place. The Copaic Ironworks responded to the threat of floods by dumping a glassy waste product called slag along their shores. Not every building was protected. Some workers' housing was destroyed by the mudslides and flooding from the Great New England Hurricane of 1938.
Head back down the trail to the furnace stack, or, if you wish, pause your audio tour here and continue up the trail to the Bash Bish Falls. It's a round-trip hike of about 3.5 miles, but a visit to the falls won't disappoint.
Stop N. Head back down the trail toward the furnace stack at sign number 4. Farming in the Copaic region sustained many local families in the 19th and early 20th centuries. Growing wheat or corn in the rocky hills of Columbia County could be difficult. By the start of the 19th century, growing rye in Columbia County became popular. Rye has been known since at least the medieval period in Europe for its ability to grow in challenging soils in colder climates. By 1855, Copaic had become one of the leading rye-producing communities in Columbia County at just over 40,000 bushels. The Copaic Ironworks was a critical factor in this successful transition to producing rye, as the works made many of the hardened cast iron plows and farm equipment that were needed to handle the region's rocky soils. Advertisements for the Columbia Chilled Plow made by the Copaic Ironworks can be found in several local periodicals and postcards of the time. The ironworks were also vital to producing the railroad car wheels that carried local products across the country. Stop O. We are now nearing the end of our walking tour through the historic community and ironworks at Copaic Falls. Everything in this beautiful landscape shaped how people chose to live in this region, starting with the formation of iron ores millions of years ago, the influence of the streams and lakes that attracted the first people to hunt and eventually farm the land, to the forests of timber that early Europeans used to build their homes and fuel their industries. We hope you've enjoyed this tour of Taconic State Park, brought to you by the support of the Friends of Taconic State Park. please visit their website at friendsoftsp.org for the latest details on events and how you can support more content like this. Thank you for listening, and we hope you return to visit and celebrate the history of Copake Falls. For more information about this region's remarkable history, please see these works referenced. Christman, Henry. Tin Horns and Calico, A Decisive Episode in the Emergence of American Democracy. Second edition, New York, New York, Collier Books, 1961. Dunn, Shirley W. The Mohicans and Their Land, 1609 to 1730. New York, Purple Mountain Press, 1994. Fisher, Donald W. The Rise and Fall of the Taconic Mountains, A Geological History of Eastern New York. Hensonville, New York, Black Dome Publishing, Inc., 2006. McGurdy, Charles W. The Anti-Rent Era in New York Law and Politics, 1839 to 1865. Chapel Hill, North Carolina, University of North Carolina Press, 2001. Mettler, Eleanor. The Fagan Sisters, A History of Life in New York Country Village, Charleston, South Carolina, Acadia Publishing, 2000. Mohican Munsee Origin and Early History, Mohican Munsee Reservation, www.mohican.com/origin-early-history. Accessed 4th April 2019. Monica, Lisa. Stone Age Mohicans. Main Street Magazine, August edition, pages 37 to 44. Parmenter, John W. Separate Vessels. The Worlds of the 17th Century Hudson Valley. Japs Jacob, L. H. Roper, Editors. SUNY Press, 2014. Stott, Peter H. Looking for Work. Industrial Archaeology in Columbia County, New York. Syracuse, New York. Syracuse University Press, 2007. Sutherland, Frederick. From Forest Town to Company Town and Back Again. Historical Archaeology at the Copake Ironworks, New York. Master's Thesis, University of Massachusetts, Boston, 2008. Trelease, Alan W. and William A. Sterna. Indian Affairs in Colonial New York, the 17th Century. University of Nebraska Press, 1997.